Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my good buddy and co-host, Todd Schnick. Good morning, Todd. What's happening, baby?
Not much, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was a great weekend. See, Saturday we raised about $50,000 for the Furniture Bank at their annual gala. And then yesterday I ran 7 miles in my marathon training. And so I am stiff as an iron rod today, but feel great.
Well, I didn't want to say anything, but you did come in kind of slow today. A little hitch in your get-along, I thought.
Yeah, well, if I could describe my legs, they feel like iron bars. I mean, they're stiff, but gosh, it feels good. I in a million years didn't think I could ever run 7 miles, but I did yesterday, and it felt great.
Well, congratulations on the 7 mile mark. Congratulations to you and the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta. What a fun event that was. We had our own table there.
We did have a table. It was a great event. I was concerned that the economy would impact the numbers, and we're still collecting cash, but all indications are that we're gonna exceed our goal from last year. So that's great news for the Furniture Bank.
Well, we got to give a shout out to some of the folks at our table. We had Nicolette Church, who was one of the artists there. And I know her piece brought in quite a bit of money, the Einstein table. And then we had a guy at our table who is also my nephew, who I invited to the event, Max Dean. A little shout out to him. He bid on what I guess you could characterize as the signature piece for the auction, that great big tabletop with the painting of the cows.
Yeah, that was an interesting piece. that'll be a conversation starter for the rest of his life, I can tell you that.
Well, it's one of a kind. I mean, you either want something like that or you don't. So I think everybody had a wonderful time, and certainly a marvelous cause, and appreciate you making that available to us. And we want to continue to support you and your efforts there on the board and Furniture Bank any way that we can.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you partnering with me and raising some cash for it. Appreciate that.
Yeah, fun stuff. So who'd you bring with you? Who are we going to have on the show this morning? How about introducing our first guest?
Gosh, well, we have a fun guest this morning, a gentleman in the true sense of the word. He is an internationally renowned speaker and a best-selling author. Welcome to the show, Bob Berg.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Stone, Lee, Todd, how are y'all today?
We're doing great. How are things down south?
They're great. They're great. Sunny and warm.
Yeah, well, that's not
fair.
Well,
not that warm, actually. Well, yeah, pretty warm.
It's sunny, not so warm here. Actually, it's not too bad today.
It's actually delightful.
We're supposed
this
to get
morning.
Snow again tonight and tomorrow.
Ay, ay, ay.
You know, it's what we've been dealing with all winter, Bob, is that we've had, you know, 65 degrees and sun on Sunday and then snow on Monday. It's just been in a crazy, crazy Atlanta winter. So how are things with you? Tell us about the new book and how that's going.
Oh, it's just sales are going tremendous of the new book. We're very, very gratified. And, you know, really the reason why is because of all the great people such as yourself and all our Twitter, Facebook friends and LinkedIn and all the people, our clients and everybody who's just gotten behind it from the get-go or from the give-go and publicized it out there. So we're very, very grateful.
Okay, so Stone, we have a new word we have to use. We have to use from the give-go.
From the give-go.
I like it.
So, Bob, what I want to do first is the book we're talking about today, Go Givers Sell More, is actually the companion piece to your last bestseller, which is The Go Giver. So maybe the best thing to do is, before we kick off a discussion on Go Givers Sell More, why don't you spend a minute and tell us a little bit about The Go Giver.
Sure. Well, The Go Giver is a business fable, business parable, so it's a work of fiction, co-authored with the great writer John David Mann, who really is a magnificent wordsmith and made the characters and story come alive. And it's really just a story about a guy named Joe, who's sort of the average Joe, which I think we've all been there. And he's a good kid. You know, he's an up-and-coming salesperson, a lot of great potential. works hard, but very focused on himself, and he finds that the way he's doing things, it's just not getting the results that he had expected. And he comes to meet a person through an introduction whose name is Pindar, and he sort of introduces Joe to another philosophy and another way of doing things. And the message of the book, I guess you could say the basic premise of the book, is simply that shifting one's focus from getting to giving, in this case meaning constantly and consistently adding value to people's lives, is not only a nice way to live, but a very financially profitable way as well.
The main character in that book, this the character named Joe, I guess was described as a go-getter. And I always thought that was a good thing. Is it not?
No, it's great. It's a great thing. And you're right. He is described as a frustrated go-getter. But that's just because of the way he's sort of going about things. We love go-getters. Go-getters are people of action. They get things done. And as you know, you're a successful business person. You can have all the greatest thoughts and intentions in the world, but unless you actually go out and get things done, it isn't going to happen. So being a go-getter is great. There's no natural, there's no natural division between a go-getter and a go-giver. Many go-getters are also go-givers, and every go-giver is a go-getter. The opposite of a go-giver is a go-taker, that person who sort of feels entitled, if you will, to take, without having added value to the person, the process, the situation. At the beginning of the story, Joe was a go-getter, which was terrific, but he had the heart of a go-taker. And as he met the various mentors in the stories, as he embraced their message, and he changed his way of doing things, he really transformed beautifully from a guy who, you know, was a go-getter with a go-taker's heart to a guy who remained a person of action, but now he had the heart of a go-giver, and that's really what made all the difference. So when we say go-giver, we're really just talking about that man or woman who has learned or perhaps intuitively knew that it's that person who can take their eyes off of themselves and focus on adding value to others. In other words, instead of being me-focused or I-focused, can be other focused. That's the person who ends up accomplishing the most.
Bob, your personal enthusiasm for this core philosophy just comes through in spades right over the airways. I'm curious, was there an event in your life or a person in your life that compelled you to go spread this message and eventually commit these ideas to paper?
Well, I was very blessed to be raised in a great family. My parents are just terrific people, and I would say my parents, to me, were, you know, the go-givers who I tried to model. I didn't always do that early in my business career, and yet when I kind of realized that was the best way of doing things, things turned for me. I also had a lot of great teachers along the way and people who I would meet when I most needed them. I remember a guy who I was just starting to work my way up in a company in the sales division. And this guy was just about to retire, and I don't even know how our conversation started. He was a guy who was a very successful person in his field, and he kind of took me aside. I think he saw me as sort of an up and coming sales hotshot, and who needed a reframe. And he was right. And he said, you know, Berg, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as your target. Your target is serving people. Now, he said, when you hit your target, you'll get a reward, and that reward will be money, and you can do with that money whatever you want, but the money is not the target. That's just the reward for hitting the target. The target is service. And, you know, I just kind of took things like that and seemed to be getting those messages all the time, but I got to say my dad is the ultimate go-giver, and, you know, there are times in the story, and of course, John, my co-author, also had wonderful parents, so we were able to draw on the experiences of all four of them. Certainly within the story, there are times that we have a couple of examples from my dad that, of course, we credited to other characters because we worked in the story. But there's definitely an overriding philosophy there of life.
So take us into Go Giver somewhere. What's the goal this book, following
sure.
The Go Giver?
Yeah, and this one, of course, is not a parable, so it's not a sequel. This is actually more of the application. This is where we take the five laws discussed in the Go-Giver, and John and I simply gear it specifically and directly to the selling process. And I would have to say that the underlying premise of this book is that when it comes to sales, it's not about you, it's about them.
You break a lot of sales, you talk about a lot of sales paradigms and you tear them down. What are some of those paradigms of sales that you talk about?
Sure. And you know, that's a great question, because I think before you can really talk about a topic, you really have to make sure that there's an understanding of what the topic really is about. And especially something with like selling that has so many preconceived notions to it. So why don't we just start there? And I just appreciate the question. John and I, we kind of feel that a lot of people look at sales backwards. People might see it as convincing people to buy something they don't want to buy, but it isn't. It's about learning what people do want to buy and helping them to get it. We might think sales is about taking advantage of others. Well, in fact, it's all about giving other people more advantage. But, you know, the biggest inversion of all, what we call the great upside-down misconception about sales, is that at its heart, it's an effort to get something from others. The truth is that sales at its best, and when I say at its best, I mean its most effective and its most profitable, it's precisely the opposite. It's all about giving. In fact, the old English root of the word sell is actually selan, which means to give. So we've got to ask the question, if we're reframing this and looking at sales differently, what is it we're giving when we're selling? Well, when you're selling, and if you're listening to the show, you are in sales. We all are. And so when you're selling, you're giving, you're giving time. You're giving attention. You're giving counsel. You're giving education. You're giving empathy. And you're giving value. And this is what you're doing when you're selling. So not only is there no reason to hem and haw about the fact that you're a salesperson, there's every reason to take a lot of pride, the good kind of pride, in the fact that you are a professional salesperson.
But in talking about sales, I mean, a lot of companies spend a lot of time and money teaching their sales team skills and techniques and methodologies and all that. You seem to downplay that a bit. Are you saying these things aren't important?
No, it's funny. That's another great question. I don't think we're downplaying the importance of sales training. We believe in it. What we're saying is that it's not necessarily the determining factor. It's not the determining factor that makes a great salesperson great. If you look at what would seem to be the three things that would make us, that would separate the, let's call it the average salesperson, which might mean, you know, also a fairly successful one, from the great, top of the line, mega successful producers. And if you look at these, it would seem a little different as far as what would be the determining factor. In other words, we might say, okay, belief in what they're doing or belief in their product. That's what separates the really top salespeople. But you know what? As much as top salespeople really believe in their product and what they're doing, so do a lot of average producers. In fact, most people, being good people, aren't going to get behind something they don't believe in. And in fact, just the opposite. They're going to find something they do believe in and get behind that. So is belief important? Absolutely. It's just not the determining factor. So what about product know-how, product knowledge? Well, the great salespeople certainly know their product inside, outside, backward, forward, sideways, what have you. But you know what? So do the average producers. A lot of them do. So what about sales skills? This would seem to be the key. In other words, you know, the top of the line, mega successful salespeople, they have studied sales. They know the closes, the opens, the objectives, you know, the whole thing. And you know what? They do. But then again, so do a lot of average producers. In fact, many times I've seen conversations and been involved in conversations between average producers, tops. You can't tell the difference. Okay, so what we're saying is that's not the determining factor, as important as it is. So let's say belief, product knowledge, skills, absolutely important. But what makes the great ones great? Well, here's what we've sort of come up with, just again, based on our own experience, the people we've had the chance to know and people we've had the chance. When you spend time with a genuinely successful salesperson, pay close attention, you'll find something really surprising. None of the hundreds of standard sales techniques are what make them excel at what they do. Now, again, please don't get me wrong. They know them, and when it will serve their prospect or customer, they'll utilize them. But what makes a great salesperson great at sales is that he or she is wholeheartedly, absolutely, unabashedly interested in the other person. And that's how they frame, that's how they look at everything they do. My good friend Michael Mayer, he is a top realtor in the Kansas City area. Massive referral business, massive business. And his company saying, the mantra, if you will, is simply, we're not number one, you are. And to me, that says it all.
Well, I certainly think it does, Bob. You know, since Todd read your book, I can't get him to shut up about something called a MacGuffin and the law of left field. Can you elaborate on those two items for us a little bit?
Oh, sure. The MacGuffin is, and it might sound like it, but it's actually not a breakfast that you would get at a fast food place. So, something totally different. A MacGuffin is a movie term. And it was dubbed by the late British film director Alfred Hitchcock. A MacGuffin can be defined as the object around which the whole story focuses. A few quick examples. In the movie classic, The Wizard of Oz, the MacGuffin is Dorothy's quest to get back home to Kansas. In the movie Rocky, the MacGuffin is the 15-round heavyweight championship fight with Apollo Creed. In the movie Titanic, the MacGuffin is a really, really big boat. But the funny thing is, when you get to the end of the story, you realize that that thing the story's about isn't really what the story was about. In The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy could have gotten home right away. That wasn't really it. It was about four friends who came to realize that that which they thought they lacked, they actually had the entire time. They just needed to step into it and embrace it. In the movie Rocky, the fight wasn't with Apollo Creed. It was an internal struggle between one guy who kind of felt like a loser, but as the story progressed, he realized he was really a winner with a lot of value to offer the world, especially those he loved and those who loved him. And in the movie Titanic, it certainly wasn't about the unsinkable ship that sank. It was about a love story between two kids from opposite ends of the socioeconomic spectrum, what have you, and how it was going to work out for them. Not real well, actually, for Jack, if you recall. But so the MacGuffin is not really what the story's about. And your product is not what the sale is about. It's about what's going to result in a happy ending for the customer. Now, this is key. If you sell insurance, insurance is simply your MacGuffin. It's not what the sale's about. What it's about is peace of mind and security. If you're a realtor, the houses are simply the MacGuffins. What it's about is creating future memories for families. There's an old sales bromide you guys are probably all familiar with, because I think we all learned this in Basic Sales 101. And it says that each and every year, millions and millions of quarter-inch drill bits are sold. And yet not one person buying a quarter-inch drill bit actually wants a quarter-inch drill bit. What they want is a quarter-inch hole. The drill bit is simply the MacGuffin. The hole is the happy ending for the customer. That's what they want. And it's the salesperson who can take their mind off their MacGuffin and focus instead on the happy ending for the customer that's going to be the most successful person. Again, it goes back to Michael Mayer. We're not number one. You are. And so it's that mindset that really is the key. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. And what a marvelous illustration. Thank you. That was very helpful for me. So tell us a little bit about this thing that you characterize as the law of left field.
Yeah, this is John actually came up with this one based on an article he wrote years ago. And I just love this. We've got to include this in the book. Okay, the law of left field basically says that the greatest gifts will come to you at moments and from places you least expect. If you've ever been in a situation where you just found a critical lead or a referral just came to you from out of nowhere, or you made some crucial connection, some golden opportunity drops unexpectedly into your lap, some incredibly valuable thing comes to us, but not from the people or the places we were expecting it or, you know, hoping it to come from, you might have said to yourself, wow, that one just came out of left field. Uh-huh. And here's the thing. When you live with a giving spirit and you simply focus on creating value for others, great value is going to come to you suddenly and unexpectedly and in great amounts. But here's the thing. We're tempted to think there's something magical about this, something mystical about this. There's not. There's nothing mystical about this at all. See, you can't know where the gifts are going to come from simply because you just can't know where your influence has spread, but it has spread. You planted so many seeds of goodwill, of great will. You know, so many people know you, they like you, they trust you, they want to see you succeed, that what's happened is the world's become what we call a benevolent context for your success. And while you really can't always see its operation, there is indeed cause and effect. The cause is giving. The effect, receiving.
Bob, you talk about a powerful approach to business and sales based on five steps: adding value, touching lives, building networks, being real, and staying open. Can you explain to me what you mean by staying open?
Sure. You know, in the first book, near the end of the story, Pindar, the main mentor, asked Joe to breathe out and hold that breath to 30. And Joe tried, but of course, within about 10 seconds, he was out of breath. He was gasping for air. And Pindar said, "What's the matter, Joe? Couldn't do it?" And Joe says, "Well, no, I can't just breathe out. I've got to breathe in." And Pindar said, "Well, Joe, what if I was to tell you it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in?" And Joe just laughed. "Well, that's silly. You've got to do both. You've got to breathe out and breathe in." "Well, exactly. That's the key. You do both. You've got to breathe out carbon dioxide. You breathe in oxygen. You breathe out, you breathe in. You breathe out, which is giving. You breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they operate best only in tandem. In fact, to focus on just one side of the equation while trying to minimize the other is really an exercise in futility, because every giving is made possible only because it's also a receiving. Every receiving is made possible because it's also a giving. What we need to do is open ourselves up to the receiving part. Many people have said to John and me, you know, the first four laws were easy. I mean, I could get my hands around that like polished wood. The fifth law gave me splinters. Because there's a lot of people who find it easier to give than to receive. And we've got to realize that receiving is a natural part of giving, made more so when your focus has been on giving. But you've still got to allow yourself to receive. You deserve to receive. You should receive when you're adding value to others. And if you don't allow yourself to receive, you're missing a huge, huge step. And we've got to realize that if we don't allow ourselves to receive, there's a reason for it. And that reason is about 95% unconscious. Now, we've had a lot of people who said, you know, since reading both books, you know, either one of them, they've been able to step more into receptivity. But the fact is, if it goes deeper than that, then you need to really work on it. You need to make sure you're getting books like The Magic of Thinking Big by Dr. David Schwartz or Think and Grow Rich, or a great book that helped me 25 years ago to overcome this challenge was Psycho-Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who shows in his book in very simple layperson's terms why our mind can sort of sabotage our success very unconsciously, and how to turn that around and have it working for us instead of against us. So, yeah, the receptivity part, being open to receive, is also very, very important.
Well, thanks for explaining that to me. You may or may not know, Bob, but when Stone and I were in Orlando last fall on the Dust Jacket tour, we had the pleasure of spending some time with Tom Scott, and you know what a fine gentleman he is.
Oh, Tom's a great Tom and his family. Tom, Jody, and the six kids, and they are just an amazing family.
Well, I know that he's integral in the marketing of this book
The marketing genius behind this.
A lot of our audience are in fact authors. Many of them self-published, and many would-be authors. And I was just curious if you could share some advice on how to creatively market a book in this day and age.
Well, you know, as far as the marketing campaign goes, it's very much based on relationships. I think the day of, depending on a few television appearances, some radio. Not that it's not all good. It is. It's all a part of it, but. You know, there was a time when, a few really good TV shows and some radio interviews and some newspaper write-ups, that was enough. And that got the book out there and so forth. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case now. I think it's done on a much more organic level, and that is with the relationships you develop. And that's why it's so important to develop those relationships well before a campaign starts. And that know, like, and trust aspect of what networking is really all about, what relationship building is all about, is so important. What someone like Tom does is, he'll take something like he created what's called the Go Giver Award. And if you go to our site at gogiverssellmore.com or thegogiver.com, there's an award actually that he put together. He created a really nice video about honoring the Go Givers in your life. There's a certificate you can download, all that great stuff. That's Tom. But what happens is, what got that started and what got that going kind of viral was the relationships that were developed beforehand. So you can have the best, the best marketing. You can have the best ideas. Without the relationships to get those started, it makes it a lot more difficult. Is it impossible? No, of course not. But it just takes a lot more time and makes it a lot more difficult.
Well, Tom is clearly one of the great go givers on Twitter.
He is.
He was one of my very first Twitter friends, if you will, when I first got on 1,000 years ago. And kudos to you. There's a lot of authors that are, quote, on Twitter, but not many give as much as you do. So,
thank you.
So appreciate that. We're wrapping up and running out of time, but I wanted to give you a second to tell the audience a little bit how they can find out more about you and your business and your speaking, and more importantly, how to get information on all these books.
Well, regarding speaking and so forth, my main website's www.burg.com, B-U-R-G.com. I also have a blog that I usually post about 4 or 5 times a week, and they're welcome to go on to that, look at some of the articles, and subscribe to the feed if they would like. Our website for the book is www.gogiverssellmore.com, and they're welcome to come on, download Introduction and Chapter 1 for free, some of which we discussed this morning on our call. And then if they like what they see at that point, they can always click right through, or they can get the book at their local booksellers. And Tom Scott and I, and that, of course, is John David Mann, is the co-author for that book, and he did such a great job, such a wonderful writer. Tom Scott, who you mentioned earlier, he and I actually produce a yearly event in Orlando, Florida, called Extreme Business Makeovers, and you can get information on that at extremebusinessmakeovers.com, and we'll be having 10 speakers, including Terry Wilkerson, Felicia Slattery, Ty Bennett, Trey Pennington, just Dixie Gillespie, just some great people at that event, including Zig Ziglar speaking on the first day. So I hope people will look into that and hopefully join us there. So got a lot of good things going on, but I really appreciate what you guys are doing. You're doing a bunch of tremendous work and touching a lot of people's lives with a lot of value, so please keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thanks for the compliment. It's been an absolute delight having you on the show, Bob. Listen, before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Well, asking me to share a mistake, is like asking me, I can't think of any really great analogy here, but just like asking me to share one thing when there's tons and tons and tons. But looking at one, it's interesting. I had to go. I had to be dragged kicking and screaming into the internet age. Mm. At a time when I really needed to have embraced it, and it set my business back quite a bit. This is, 8, 9, 10 years ago, and I just really was like a lost puppy for a while. And so that really hurt. I should have embraced it, and I should have, I should have not only accepted change, I should have embraced it, and I really didn't. I sort of negative self-talk myself into saying, well, I'm really not technologically based, and I've got a good enough reputation at blah blah blah. You know what? Baloney. I should have embraced it right away, and I should have worked it, and it really set me back for a while. So I would say that's a mistake that I made that I got to learn a good lesson from.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's amazing to me in March. I can't believe it's March of 2010. How many people still aren't fully embracing the internet? So that's good to hear that from you, and that's an important message. Bob, it was indeed a great pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, I thank you all very much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, have a great day. Stone, who do we got next?
Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, I am delighted to introduce a gentleman by the name of Bob Toby. He's with the Sales Improvement Zone. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Gosh, it's a Bob Fest with Bob Berg and Bob Toby on here. Guys are surrounded.
So glad you got a chance to hear that interview. That was a wonderful interview. What a guy. Class act.
Yeah, class act. It sounds like a great book, too. We so often forget that, we're selling is a great career, and we do deliver value. Everything that's sold delivers a value. So, it's good to hear. Good to hear somebody that's sharp.
I think one of the key points that's made in that book is a lot of people find sales tough work and hard work. And what I think the message there is if you're giving and helping and serving, that it actually becomes rewarding work.
Absolutely. My wife is always upset with me because I don't work for a living. I have fun for a living. And selling is a lot of fun, helping people really achieve their dreams and achieve their goals. That's what it's all about. So, hats off to Bob and the co-author. Throw out a plug for him too. Forgot what his name was, but anyway, yeah. So I'll buy the book and hopefully get it autographed one of these days.
Yeah, the co-author is John David Mann.
There you go.
Well, we are going to get it autographed because here's my proposition. I say that all the Atlanta crew, we all hop in my Dodge Caravan and just head on down to the Extreme Business Makeovers.
Well, I don't know. That roster of speakers that he listed is an impressive list.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not even
talking about Zig Ziglar. I'm talking about the other guys.
Oh, I know. So I think we ought to do that. Well, tell us a little bit, if you will, Bob, about the Sales Improvement Zone. What's this thing all about?
Well, the Sales Improvement Zone is an online training company, and it's all video, one of the only training sites on the internet that is total video. Now, the Sales Improvement Zone still is actively pursuing and selling live training events, but really what sets us apart is the online video of everything. You can get all the training you want online for $12.95. So it's streamed. It's good stuff. We had a guy write in the other day, and he wrote, I like your site because it gives you answers. Most of the other sites give you vague answers. This one actually tells you in detail, in tough situations, what to say.
Well, and it really does. I mean, it's very practical. There's certainly some strategic guidance, but there's very tactical guidance in all of the modules. I like the way that you set up the fee structure, the pricing model, because for large sales forces to invest $12.95 a head per month, I mean, that's nothing. And it's very affordable, but also if you're a sole practitioner or you're a little partnership like Schnick and I, for what, $25 a month, we can go in there and we can access a ton of really good stuff. Tell us, if you will, though, I want you to share with our listeners a little bit more about your live training process and this whole idea of incorporating simulation in your sales training. Say more about that, if you will.
Right. Well, the all training companies that do live training all talk about customization. And what happens is they'll send out a questionnaire, they'll get some answers to questions, what are the objections that you hear most often, and all those are good. And we do that too. We take it a little bit further in that we'll actually go out and make sales calls with salespeople. We learn your products, we learn your competition. And we learn your company, the culture of your company. That is true customization. So when we get finished customizing a particular program, we can actually go out and compete on the street with your sales guys, anybody that's been selling for you, depending on your product and the technicality of your product, for 6 months to a year. That's true customization. Now, the simulation part of that is a one-on-one sales experience where the salesperson actually makes a sales call, a couple of sales calls during the training session. We videotape those. We give them instructor feedback. We give them video feedback so they can see, you know, what how they're being received by the customer. Now, what makes that different than other training companies? Well, most training companies set up what they call a triad, where they will have the students or the attendees actually participate in the role play. And this, to me, has always been the blind leading the blind. Here you have just taught a skill. Now you're expecting someone to evaluate that skill. And, you know, they really don't know the skill yet, because they were just taught it. And I know why trainers do that. They do it because they don't take the time to learn the business. They don't take the time to learn their products, learn their competitors. So they can't really portray the part of the customer. So that's what sets us off. We have trained instructors. We've been out in the field. We know their products. We know their customers. We know what their customers say. So, you know, when somebody is talking, you know, about their products or even asking questions about what our goals are, we know what their customers' goals are. We've done a lot. We've scanned bodies. We portrayed doctors where we've had to memorize the anatomy. You know, so you know that's just one side. The other side is software, where we have to know, you know, the particular computer setup of a customer. So it gets quite involved, and a lot of trainers just don't either have that expertise or just don't take the time to do that.
And video can be such a revealing training tool if you use it properly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to beat people over the head with it. Share with us, if you will, some insights about how to use video and video feedback in a way that's going to build me up as a participant as opposed to tear me down. And I ask that question because I've spoken with salespeople that cringe when you talk to them about video being involved in the training process.
Yeah, it's a problem with people that don't know how to give feedback. First of all, you'll get people that will should on you. That's should, S-H-O-U-L-D. Yeah, so, you know. They'll should all over you. And here I'm talking to guys that are making 6-7 figures, salespeople. I'm not going to should on them. What I can tell you is how you made me feel as a customer. Mm. And you either made me feel good or you made me feel bad. Here's the video of what was happening when you were not making me feel good. I'll give you a great example. I was doing a simulation with a person, and I said, you know, I felt that you didn't listen to me. And this salesperson looked at me and says, I have a photographic memory. I can play this sales call back to you word for word. And I said, well, you know, I'm glad that you can do that. I'm the customer, and I don't think you listened to me because you didn't write anything down. It didn't seem like you cared about what my problem was. That's the point. So the fact that you have a great memory, that doesn't pass the so what test when it comes to actually giving value,
right,
or giving, as Bob had said, to the customer. So that's just one example. There's a lot of other examples. The funniest one that comes to mind, we were doing simulations for a brand new bunch of salespeople in the telemarketing, the telephone industry. And we had to set the simulation up in a particular part of a conference room where the electricity or the heater, in this case, the air conditioning, would shut off without any activity. So we're sitting down doing this, and about 15 minutes, the air conditioning shut down. And all of a sudden, this guy starts sweating bullets. It got a lot. It got really warm in that room, you know. And he's just soaking wet. And, you know, the video feedback, golly, look at that. That's just disgusting. I said, yeah, you might want to wear a T-shirt. It'll help keep that outer shirt a little fresher. I mean, you know, those little things, that thing, the thing with the customer not listening, you know, all those things add up when you're giving feedback to a salesperson. And if you look at what Bob Berg was talking about, those really, really good salespeople, You know, if you look at the bell curve and the 80-20 rule, 20% of your salespeople are giving you 80% of your revenue. So working with those 20%, you know, how do you make them better? Well, they become givers, but the other side of that is that you give them the skills to allow them to give. You give them individual skills, and you can do that in simulation, you can do that with video, and you can do that with feedback.
You're a pioneer in video-based training. I feel like still most companies that exist still aren't fully embracing the opportunity that video has in terms of over their marketing. Do you talk at all about how to teach salesmen how to use video in their individual approach to prospecting?
Yes, we do. We talk about marketing. When I was in the computer software sales business, we didn't have really any good marketing tools. And so, I mean, you could go and you could go, woe is me, or you could do what our author, Question Behind the Question, that book would ask.
And, John Miller.
Yeah, John Miller.
That's a great book. I love
yeah,
that book.
And ask, what can I do to help market myself and my company? So, yeah, you make your own marketing materials. You do what you create, and you make the effort to create your own marketing materials to help you sell. Video is very simple today. I think a flip camera costs you, about $180. You can set up something simple in your basement. You can edit it together. You can put it out there. And you can send messages to customers now in 30-second to 60-second forms where, you know, especially if you're talking about young customers who are into texting and into Twitter and not so much into face-to-face relationships or telephone relationships, you can send them a personalized video that can really hit home with them. And they enjoy seeing that. People learn with video today, not so much with the written word. You know, most of the newspapers, magazines are going out of business because people are reading less and less.
Well, and you can do so much with video now that you couldn't do even 2 years ago. I mean, maybe 2 years ago it might have been relatively easy to produce. I don't know. I really had not been brought into the fold yet at that point. But, you know, the internet didn't have, I don't think, the bandwidth to share it as readily as you do now.
Well, you had two problems. You had the editing problem and the bandwidth problem for the internet. The bandwidth now on the internet can handle video. The other problem was you had to go to a studio, you had to have somebody professionally edit it together, or you had to spend $10,000 on an editing suite,
right?
You know, to put it on your customized Macintosh computer, and then you had to sit there and learn that. You know, today, I mean, you know, a couple paragraphs with the editing software that's out there, you can edit it together really, really easy. You put something really classy together, and you know, and help market yourself.
Now, the other side of this, though, and I'd be interested in your perception on this, I sense that sometimes we let the technology and the tools overtake us, and we forget about some of the basics, like go-giving, like asking good questions, like responding with clear, concise, compelling language. And I wonder, do you see that in the work that you do where people have become overly enamored with the Twitter and the Facebook and the video and the do you see that, or am I just being a sensitive old man?
Well, you know, we're beginning to hear it more and more from salespeople that they can't get FaceTime with customers. Selling still is a face-to-face business. You need to get the FaceTime. So in the giving part, if we're going to stay with Bob Berg's vernacular, people ought to want to see you because you're giving them value. You're educating them. You're giving them things that can help them do their job. Once you do that, people will see you, and you can get away from that Twitter blow off or just send me a proposal or here's your RFP, just fill it out the way I tell you to fill it out. It leaves you on the same playing field with everybody else. You have to be able to break out.
I read a statistic this weekend, and someone tweet me if I have it wrong, but I think I read that 82% of people online watch and seek out videos, which is actually lower than I thought it would be, but that's still
staggering.
A lot of people, and so it just goes to show the power of these tools. And you're right, Stone. I mean, social media doesn't give you sales. it gets a relationship that leads to sales, and it does come down to a face-to-face, and that's where what Bob's talking about and teaching you how to have a stronger face-to-face presentation. But video is where it's going, and it's just amazing to me.
Well, right. I'm sorry. I was going to say the other thing that was staggering, as he opened up his comment, he said, tweet me if I'm wrong. I mean, isn't that really cool? I mean, you get immediate feedback. We'll get feedback in just a minute if somebody goes, oh, no, he's got that stat all wrong. I mean, that's cool.
Well, and I don't know. If you're a salesperson, you have come up with a customer saying, send me your stuff. You know, send me some information. And so you go out and you produce this really nice marketing piece. It costs you $4, $5, $6. You put that in the mail. You call them back. Did you get my stuff? No, I didn't get you my stuff. So then you call them. You know, you have to resend your stuff. Did you get the stuff? Yeah, I'm not. You know, you go through that whole rigmarole now. And if you're looking at simplifying that, just hit my website. You know, hit my website. And you better have a good website. More and more decision makers today are doing a lot of pre-qualifying, a lot of vetting before you even get there through your website. So if you don't have an updated website, you don't have something that is going to hold some attention, you don't have video, you don't have some updated things, you're going to get vetted out.
It's got to pop. I mean, that website's got to pop. And even if you're not in the video sales training business, I mean, I could build a case. I think it's just about got to have video on it nowadays, don't you guys?
Yeah, I think it does.
Well, you remember what, what's his name, Youngblood, said the other day about meeting someone down at the airport, and they walked up to him and shook his hand like they'd known him all his life because they had gone to a website that had good, solid thought leadership and was complemented with some video material.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that says a lot.
Well, you're singing to the choir here. I think it's the way people learn today, you know, with video. I mean, it's a video world. All of your young people coming into business now, they're playing all the video games. even older folks are watching more and more news to get their news. So, you know, it's a video world. And if you haven't made that bridge, you know, investigate on how to do it. It's really, really simple to do. I mean, it'd scare you how simple it is to do. I mean, a lot of people have the paradigm that you have to go into an expensive studio with expensive cameras, expensive lighting, and all that stuff, and you really don't have to do that. You can do it in your own backyard, so to speak, or your basement, or your office. It's just a matter of you know, just a couple of little small steps.
And I want to ask you a little bit about the advantages of video as a training tool. And I don't mean simulation like we were talking about earlier with video feedback. I mean, what advantages, if any, are there in watching Bob Tobey teach a module on presentation or negotiation or handling objections? What advantages, if any, are there in having video of you readily available for me to watch versus me going to your class, or do they complement each other? Say something a little bit about that.
Well, they actually complement each other. I mean, you know, the best training is live with simulation, where you can teach a skill and then have somebody actually practice it, actually watch themselves do it, and then critique themselves. Because any skill you get, I don't care if you're going to go out and play basketball and shoot a jump shot. The first time you shoot a jump shot, it's not going to be as skillful as, you know, it's going to be by practicing it 3 weeks later. So that's the best training. The problem with that is that it's very expensive, and a lot of companies are not flipping the bill for that. They're looking at really tough times, so budgets have been cut. So what's the next best thing? Well, the next best thing is video that you can watch. And what we've tried to do with the Sales Improvement Zone is actually put sales examples with sales and customer interactions in the video so that you can see good way, bad way, those types of things, and you get a feel for how it's going to work out. We even do a lot of times what's going to happen to you when you try this skill for the first time in the real world. what are customers going to say? Because, you know, believe me, I've tried them all, and they haven't all gone that well, or I've been stumped once or twice. And so what happens when you get stumped? So we've tried to include all of that in the videos. The other thing that we're doing that's real interesting are reinforcement tips. The reason a lot of people don't like to invest a lot of money in live training is that there's no reinforcement. You get a manual, everybody, you know, does a high five or gets together, you know, go sales
play around
on one,
golf.
Two, three, one, two, three, yeah, you know, let's go sales and play around to golf and then away you go. Or worse, have it at a real nice, expensive venue and with a golf course out the window and not have
right.
time for that.
Ouch.
So, yeah,
that's
so,
even worse.
So we have live training, you do live training with the Sales Improvement Zone. You get reinforcement tips. You do a sales training module on the website, you're going to get reinforcement tips. And these are 30-second to 2, 3, 4-minute reminders of the training and how to use it out in the real world. So, you know, your investment is enhanced by those reinforcement tips. And then, you know, the third way to do it would be to read a book. A lot of times you can't get a lot of well, you have to envision how you're going to use that skill in the field, and reading a book, oftentimes it gets lost, you know. So I think we put together something that for everybody is a win. If you're an entrepreneur, you can't afford to have your sales staff trained for $12.95 for a lunch. You can have each salesperson trained. Plus, you can reinforce that training. If you're a large organization, you can afford that one-on-one training to take your top 20%, move them up the ladder. There's reinforcement to assure that that gets done. And you can't get rid of your other 80%, those people that are out there personing a territory. You need to get them training. Well, the problem with them is you don't want to just train them and let them go back to their bad habits. There's reinforcement tips that can take them to the next level. So I think we've put together an online training facility here that is win-win for everybody.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Bob, do you have some material on the website that people can view for free just to
get
a sense of how that works?
Absolutely. www.salesimprovementzone.com. One of the first things you'll see is a free training button. And there are right now probably 30 reinforcement tips in there that they can view. And the one thing that, you know, always got me about sales training sites on the web is that, you know, their information, like one of our customers wrote in, is vague. I mean, they give you just a little bit of a bite and then try to sell you a book or try to sell you a seminar. And we don't do that at Sales Improvement Zone. Every thought is complete. For example, closing a presentation audience. I don't know of any salesperson that makes presentations that hasn't got to the end of their presentation said, how about giving me your business, and the ultimate decision maker saying, we need to think about
gotta
it.
Think
we
about
need
it.
To have another meeting to talk about your presentation.
Right.
You know, so you walk out, you get to that point, you walk out, and you're done at that point. You lose control of the sales cycle right then because you're not doing anything until they meet. And so you're desperately calling around your sales managers, asking you when the order is going to be written. So you're calling the customer, and they don't even pick up the phone because there's no need to see you. They've got your proposal. They've seen your presentation. They got all your stuff. There's no need to see you. So how do you get around that? And you'll go to that. You'll go into the website, into the free training, and there's four modules that walk you through the skill to get around that, get past
oh,
that.
Oh, great.
And at least do everything you possibly can while you're there at the presentation to walk out with an order.
Well, that's great that you have some free content on there. I talk about the Berg vernacular with giving.
That's go give. That's a go giver.
Did I hear you right that you have 30 small videos, tips on reinforcement?
Right, and wow. We're adding to it every day. It's one of our beliefs that, you know, you need to give, and we want to help salespeople. That's the whole point of the Sales Improvement Zone, is to help salespeople get better at their craft. You know, Bob had talked about the really good salespeople wanting to give, and I've got a great I have a new idea for a new module or a new free training, and that's, you know, get that mindset, and even have that mindset past, you know, the board of directors wanting money, the president of the company wanting money, or vice president of sales complaining about quotas, and your sales manager complaining about, you know, you meeting quota. I look back at some of my career, and there was so much pressure on quota, you tend to get a little go get.
Right, you know, or go take
you'll
even.
Go take. You get go take mentality when you ought to be going, continue with that go giving.
Well,
attitude.
I mean, that's easy for that to happen because in a lot of sales cultures, it's so, would it be fair to characterize it as short-term thinking? I mean, everything is framed up so often in so many of these organizations as quarter by quarter. Mm-hmm. What have you done for me lately? What are your numbers? And well, I can see where that would sort of contribute to the go-taker mentality.
You know, you go back to the Deming days, the total quality management, and where they looked at the Japanese way of doing things, you know, that they're looking 5-10 years down the road. And, well, that's all fine and good, but in America, if you don't get it done in a quarter, you're generally out. I mean, there's so much pressure to perform. One of the first training sessions, live training sessions that we did, we talked to the sales manager. Before we jumped on the plane, everything was good. We got off the plane, and he was gone because he missed his month the first time in like 23 months, and he's out of there. He's fired because he missed the month. So, it's strange. There is a lot of pressure on salespeople.
And the managers.
Yeah, and the managers, and there will continue to be. So you have to understand where that pressure is coming from. You have to understand how to take that away from, off of the customer.
But what continues to boggle my mind is that those managers who are applying pressure to the sales force are doing the opposite of what they should do to get these guys encouraged to do this kind of, and they're not applying the go-giving principles. They're not doing the kind of things like you are and sharing free video on your website. So many businesses out there, they would not do that. Say, oh, you got to pay. It's amazing to me how many small businesses and entrepreneurs still don't have that giving mentality. That's a big thing of what we talk about, Stone, on Circlenomics.
Well, it is, but I think that's why, given our relative lack of talent, we've had some success, and I think that's why people like Bob Tobey are leaders in their market because they've embraced that attitude, and God love you. I think it's wonderful. I think you deserve everything you're getting, man.
Well, from a sales manager standpoint, because I've certainly been there, and one of the first lessons I ever got, I was just promoted into sales management, and my sales manager called me in, or my boss called me into his office, the general manager of this TV station in Tucson, KGUN TV. I'll never forget it, Scott Vaughn. And he sat there and said, it's 9 o'clock, and all of your salespeople are sitting at their desks. I would have thought that you would have had them out making sales calls by now. So I said, yes, sir, yep, I'll get on it. So I called them all in to the conference room and read them the Riot Act. I mean, I just lit fire under each one of them. And they all got out of the office, so I thought I did a pretty good job. At the end of the day, Scott called me back in the office, because the conference room was right next to his, and said, do you think, how you handled what happened today the correct way? Well, yes, sir, I did. I got them all out there. Yeah, but every salesperson that came in to me and complained about how you belittled them and how you yelled at them this morning, you got to understand, Tobe, the way I motivate you is different than the way you need to motivate your people. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to understand the pressure that I'm under and then spread that in a different way to your people. Oh, okay, I got it. So I called all the salespeople back into the conference room, apologized for my immaturity, and said, okay, sorry, let's just pretend that never happened again. We'll meet tomorrow at 8:30, and we'll do this all over again. So we all had them come in at 8:30. I did it differently, and they all enjoyed that. So, that was a big lesson. A lot of sales managers need to learn that lesson. They really need to be able to take the pressure that is on their boss and be able to spread that to their people a little bit differently.
In a different way. And kudos to you for being able to acknowledge the shortcoming and to recover and come back and do it the right way. But it also, to me, that leans up against what I think is probably a core principle in some of your training, in this idea of even going beyond having to do it a different way for your group. There's some wisdom, I suspect. I'd like to get your opinion on this, in managing and leading people differently, even individually, idiosyncratic. Like, you might mm-hmm. lead or manage a Todd Schnick a little differently than you might lead or manage me. You might need to hit me between the eyes with a 2x4, where you might handle the same issue more subtly with a Todd. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. I think each individual, and really that's called interaction behaviors, what I call interaction behaviors. Some people call it four personality types. There's all different models out there. There's a color model out there. There's, you can have any kind of bird. I think there's a bird model out there. DISC is probably the most.
I want to be a hummingbird.
Well, yeah, DISC is probably the most popular model, along with Myers-Briggs. The problem with most of those models is it tells you a lot about yourself, but doesn't tell you how to modify your sales process to how people like to buy. The other side of that on managing, those models tell you a lot about yourself, tell you a lot about the other person, but don't tell you how to manage that person. We've taken that another step. We actually go into showing managers, or in this case, salespeople, how to sell the way people like to buy.
Well, there's an idea.
It's been around for a long time,
right?
But there is a skill to it in being able to recognize how people like to buy. I mean, some people like a lot of detail. Other people are more concerned about the people and the processes of how you're going to interrupt their process and their people and their organization. Other people just like to look good, and other people like to make their own decisions. They like a lot of different choices. So if you can recognize that, it gives you that little extra bit in the back of your pocket to do a better job and outperform your competition.
And it doesn't mean you have to let go of who you are. You
incorporate
that.
No,
right?
You don't change who you are. You just change the way you approach the person a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, if a person wants a lot of detail, give them a lot of detail. You're taught in sales, don't give a lot of detail because it slows the process. Well, if you're talking to a detailed person and you don't give them detail, you're actually lengthening the process because
right.
They've got 1,000 questions about what's going to happen. If you're giving a lot of detail to somebody who's only interested in what you're going to do for me, you're lengthening, you're shortening the process because they're not going to go through that information. They're going to kick you out of there because you're boring them to tears. So you're lengthening that process too.
Yeah.
So it's knowing how to deal with individual people.
Well, two things. Anybody out there that thinks they want to sell stone painting something, leave the detail at the office. Don't need it. Also, where can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about Sales Improvement Zone and the rest of your work? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Best place is salesimprovementzone.com, and you can go into contact us. You can either write sales@salesimprovementzone.com or customer support. I'll get that email, and we'd get right back to you.
Terrific. Well, listen, you've already been kind enough to share one, what would you call it, hiccup in your career with the sales staff at a radio station. But I wonder if you would, as we asked our earlier guest, I wonder if you'd be willing to share yet another mistake that maybe you made at some point in your career and what you feel like you learned from it. Could we con you into doing that for us as we wrap up?
Yeah, there's so many to choose from. Outside of marrying my wife, I think my wife has been one big mistake, but that was after the old good old wife. 30 years of love and bliss that's been wonderful.
It's okay. We can fix that in post.
Yeah,
don't worry about that.
I think for a lot of people and for me that once you chart a path, it's so easy to get off that path. You set goals for yourself. You all of a sudden you wake up and it's Wednesday and you haven't done much for that week to accomplish any goals. There's a tendency to give up for that week. Or at the end of the day, you haven't done much. There's a tendency to give up that day and then move on to the next day. And I think that's what I would like to pass on to people, that it's not too late to get back on track. Once you set your goals, if you find yourself off track, hey, you know, jump back on. And don't beat yourself up too bad. You know, tomorrow's a new day. The other thing I'd like to pass on to people who are after new business, don't forget that the next call you make might be the quota buster.
Ah, good advice.
Yeah.
Well, Tobe, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
My pleasure.
And I'm certainly looking forward to diving back into salesimprovementzone.com and looking at some of those reinforcement tips and learning more about interaction behaviors. And anxious to have you back on the show sometime and talk more about your live training. This has been very informative.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. I look forward to it.
Yeah. What do you think, Todd? That was a good, productive show. We learned a lot about selling today, huh?
I was going to tell you, if you're in sales, this was a good show to pay attention to.
Yeah, and I wasn't just talking. I think we ought to head to South Florida and go see Bob Berg and those guys on the with the Extreme Makeovers thing. I don't know when that is, but we'll find out.
Well, you recall when we saw Tom last fall, he was talking all about that.
Yeah.
So that's a big piece of what those guys do together, and it's a wonderful program.
Well, in a shout out to Tom Scott. I thoroughly enjoyed meeting him while we were down there, and I think he's probably the reason we got connected with Bob Berg. It was good to meet him and appreciate the connection there as well.
Yep.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Bob Toby, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.